Next time you're driving through Richmond, Virginia, maybe on Interstate 95, and thinking, oh, I would just love to have an easy stop where I could just kind of drop a little bit, maybe pick up some cider to go, or take a little sit, have some exquisite cheese, and enjoy the surroundings. Well, you are in luck, because on this here episode, we're going to be finding out how you can make that stop so easy by visiting Blue Bee Cider. Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world.
Hip, hip, hooray!
Hello, hello to all the regular listeners out there in Ciderville. And if you are a new listener of Cider Chat, well, you have come to a perfect podcast, because not only do we talk about technical stuff, but we also just talk about the great, glorious world of cider and all its different little hubs and special spots of Ciderville in villages and cities, in tasting rooms. In fact, we have a wonderful conversation this week with Courtney Malley at Blue Bee Cider in Richmond, Virginia. And I just loved this location. It's just so old world Europe. But I'm going to hold on to that. So just so you know, I chit-chat a little bit, have a little bit of news out and about in Ciderville, and then we go to the main featured conversation, which you could always scroll forward to. But then you would kind of miss fun things like this little transitional piece that my cousin Jay and I sing.
Walking through the orchards.
That little piece is pulled from a larger song called We Like Cider, which you'll be able to hear at the end of this here episode. So you got to wait till the very end. And there's also a second song that I bring into this here episode with each week now for season 7, where I'm singing, hey, 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 apples. That's from a new song called Strange Apples. And I just had so much fun recording that with my cousin. Just love singing, love playing around with that. And that's just a little bit of the spice and life of Cider Chat. On top of amazing conversations with all the folks in the trade, cider enthusiasts, just wonderful people out there in Ciderville. And in addition, also folks who sponsor this year's podcast. So let's go to that next. When making cider, it really comes down to two critical ingredients. One, you want to start with great apple juice, and maybe you could source that from a cider mill. And two, you got to decide about yeast, because the yeast plays such a huge role in the final product. It can make the difference between a fruity, sweet, or dry cider, and it should provide an element of balance in that finished product. Now, right now, if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, you're probably out pruning and collecting scion wood and all that. But March in the Southern Hemisphere is when the fall equinox is coming, and that happens on March 20th. So don't you know, while we are thinking about spring where I live, down south of us, they're thinking about fall, and it is harvest time. They're into cider making. So if you live in that kind of region of the world, you are in the thick of it thinking about yeast, because yeast converts the sugar in apple juice into alcohol. And on top of that, it really impacts the final profile of that bottle or can of cider. So you might be asking yourself, do I want a balanced cider? Maybe I want a dry cider. Maybe this time I want to make it a sweet or fruity or crisp cider. If those questions are kind of revolving around right now, I have the perfect solution for you. Go to fermentis.com and check out their expanding range of cider yeast. Once again, that is fermentis.com. Now, while you're on your computer checking out Fermentis, you might also want to consider sending me an email to info@ciderchat.com if you have an interest in coming along with me on a Totally Cider tour to Normandy or Brittany, France in fall of 2022. This isn't my first rodeo out there leading a tour, and I'll tell you, they just keep on getting better and better because, ooh, the uniqueness of this countryside, the food, the people, and the cider and the poire. The poire is really perry made out of perry pears. You know, you ferment pears and you also ferment apples, right? Each one has its own unique characteristic. And the region of Domfontein, which we'll be going to, we're going to the Musée du Poire. I just could go on and on about it. And I'm going to save you for that for now because I'll be talking about it in many coming weeks ahead. But suffice to say, you go to one maker and you typically can experience cider, poire, Calvados, which is distilled cider, or it could be distilled perry, and then Pommeau, which is a blend of apple juice and Calvados. And they have very precise protocols for making these products, which really allows the French to stand out. So if this interests you and you're starting to salivate and think, oh yeah, that's exactly what I want to do, give me 7 days in Normandy and Brittany and let's just feast on the whole experience. Well, check it out. Send me an email to info@ciderchat.com so I can put you at the top of the list once this goes live. All right, I'm back this week once again with Dennis Keebler from Schrammel. This company is based in Slovenia and they make cider making equipment that is shipped around the world. In fact, I do know some cider makers, both in the U.S. and internationally, which use Schrammel products. And this week, we're going to be talking about belt press versus pneumatic press. So what do you have to say about that, Dennis?
The everlasting dilemma. It all depends on your production style and the outcome you desire. What do you expect from your cider?
Are you more conservative?
Or do you like to experiment with flavors in different undertones? There is no right or wrong. I will try to answer it from the technical part.
But at the end of the day, the machinery should only support your idea of how your cider should taste, feel, and look, right?
Yes.
Cool. Well, let's get into the technical aspects then.
In the case of the belt press, you have a layer of fruit pulp that is squeezed between a moving belt and rollers.
All right, so that's a belt press. It has moving belts and rollers. But the pneumatic press, on the other hand, it's a machine that's horizontally placed. It's a long cylinder and it has an inflating membrane that squeezes the fruit pulp against the drain elements. And from what I know, the belt press works continuously, while the pneumatic press is more of a batch system.
Yes, belt presses in comparison are much smaller than pneumatic presses.
Okay, so we have two different presses, the belt press, the pneumatic press. How do each of them deal with the juice? Because it's all about the juice.
Okay, juice from the belt press will contain more solids.
Right, right. The belt press has more solids due to the higher pressing and shearing forces, while the pneumatic press will extract solids due to soft pressing procedure. And the thick pulp cake in the cylinder, it kind of acts like a filter.
Perfect.
Good, good. This is really helping me kind of figure it out because belt presses and pneumatic presses, it's kind of like, what's the big difference? But it has a lot in consideration to the juice on the pressing and the force and what it's extracting. Because from what I'm getting here, the gentle pressing from the pneumatic press will extract more from the fruits, which are often, you know, because they're ripe, soft, and also difficult to press.
It's all about the juice, right?
It is all about the juice and how it gets squeezed out of that apple. I know that Schrammel has both the belt press and the pneumatic press. And they could, of course, call anyone at Schrammel and talk about it. Cool stuff. So next week, let's talk a little bit about how flexible the two different pieces of equipment are, because I think that would be equally interesting.
Okay, cool.
Okay, great. I look forward to that. And of course, Ciderville out there, you do not have to wait for Dennis and I to start talking about the equipment that Schrammel produces and can ship to your cidery. Just go to schrammel.com. That's spelled S-R-A-M-L. It's time now to head to our featured conversation with Courtney Malley of Blue Bee Cider in Richmond, Virginia. Now, I want to give you a little bit of an image here. I had a sit-down outside with Courtney in the beginning of February 2022, and it was warm enough and sunny enough and just absolutely dreamy enough to enjoy this conversation outdoors in February, which might not be a big deal if you live in Virginia all the time, but for myself, who lives up in New England, this was a big treat for me. And then on top of it, the actual sitting area is in a courtyard. And this isn't a courtyard in the city that has like skyscrapers. No, these are like low roof buildings, which are part of the production facility for Blue Bee Cider. And they're all made out of stone. The stonework is just everywhere. I mean, you go into the main tasting room, that's really well appointed and it's all stonework. It's just so warm and inviting. And then right next to the tasting room, you could walk through the side door and walk into Truckle Cheesemonger. There's a cheese shop right next to it. And charcuterie to boot. I mean, pinch me. This is like the epitome of what you want for a cider experience. Cider, stonework, at least for Rhea. Nice people, little warming area if the night gets chilly, and beautiful, you know, flames on the table that just make it really warm and inviting, kind of like a date night or fun place to hang out with friends. Really awesome cider. I mean, I can't say enough about the cider. That was absolutely delicious. We'll talk more about that with Courtney. But the setting itself just really threw me, surprised me. I didn't expect it, and I'm floored. And it is so easy to get to right off of Interstate 95. So just kind of put that in your to-go places or while you're heading either south or north on that big highway, you got a little safe haven to go. And of course, there's other places to go to in the area. It's just like a foodie capital, Richmond. I've been doing a number of episodes on this. So if you go last week, I had Diane Flint. And then the week before, I had both Diane Flint, the keynote from CiderCon, and Gary Flowers, who spoke about the Jackson Ward area and the tour he led there. And actually, Courtney Malley was instrumental in setting that up. So this gal really embraces Richmond, is really helping to showcase it. And, you know, what showcases a region better than cider, quality cider? Need I say more? No. So let's head to the beginnings. She's going to take us back on her journey. I found it really fun and interesting on how she kind of came to be a cider maker and how it really started in high school.
In the 11th grade, we all took a career aptitude test. And of all the kids in my class, I was the only one who came out top of the list as a farmer. And I could not understand what that was about, because everyone else was engineer, attorney, doctor, and I mean, their parents all worked for NASA in the shipyard, so of course they were coming out tops in engineering, but I just had a completely different outcome, and I thought the test was ridiculous. So I sort of put that to the side and didn't think about it. I spent most of my summers working at the pool, so as lifeguarding and coaching swimming. And then the fateful day comes and you graduate from college and you have to get a real job. And everybody else, the doctors and lawyers and engineers, had already been pursuing real jobs long before. So that should have been my first clue that outdoors is where I was meant to be. Mm-hmm. But I went to graduate school in urban planning and focused on historic preservation. So obviously that's why I had an affinity for this property. And I don't regret any of that schooling, but after three months working inside and not having summer, I just started to crumble emotionally. I was like, I can't believe I'm never going to be outside every day of the summer for the rest of my life. And I was kind of complaining about it to one of my friends in the elevator, and one of the accountants from the company who shared the same floor as us, he just laughed and he said, oh, you'll get used to it. And I just didn't believe that I could ever get used to it. So I started to think about options for value-added agriculture. I was working in economic development at that point. So I kind of understood the bigger picture about how business works and ecosystems that make businesses profitable. And so I had enough of a background in what I thought would help me pick an agricultural pursuit, but obviously I was 20-something and had no money. Like, the crux of all business is capital, right? Mm-hmm, so I still had some student loans and was kind of finding my way in life, but I was lucky enough to come across other economic development entities that did have a focus in agriculture and forestry. And there was one economic developer who was consulting with us on a trip, and he had a loan in his portfolio go bad for a forestry company. He's like, hey, do you have $20,000? I could sell you a couple hundred acres in Maine. And I was like, wait. And of course, this was a long time ago when $20,000 meant more, but it still wasn't
that much.
And
were you in Virginia?
I was in Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C., okay.
Yeah. Right. And he said, you just have to want to be interested in growing trees and selling them. And that was my first, like, confrontation with reality that, yeah, there are opportunities out there, but you have to be ready. Mm-hmm. So I was not ready. I had no money. I had no skills. Our family hadn't been farming for generations. So I decided to just do an international trip. And while I was working...
Go to Europe. Why not?
Yeah, so I went...
When in doubt, go to Europe.
Yeah. So I went to Northern Ireland and worked with a community there. And while I was doing that work, my uncle started consulting with the Republic of Ireland in the south about the wine industry or lack thereof and what it might take mm-hmm. to put a wine industry together there. So I was like, wait a minute. A whole country is asking Uncle Miles for his advice on how to build a wine industry. He knows things. Why have I never talked to him about this before? And so that's when I started to clue into the fact that obviously alcohol is the highest value added agriculture, so I should start narrowing my search. And beer, wine, spirits, and everything in between is kind of the best way to make money growing things. So I still had those student loans. I got married. Life happens. Time went by, and suddenly I was 37 and still hadn't really made a move. So I started taking steps and making plans and getting financially ready to jump off the edge and do entrepreneurship intensively for the first time. And that's what I did. So I left my job on December 2nd and went to cider school on December 3rd.
Cider school, which one?
The one at Cornell. So okay. Peter Mitchell was still teaching at that time.
Oh, nice.
And I did that with my dad. So he drove with me because I was decompressing from the financial crisis, which was like a full focus activity when you're in economic development mm-hmm. in that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he drove the car so that I could just kind of chill out and begin to think about cider in a real way. And
wow.
After cider school, started my apprenticeship at Albemarle Cider Works and drove there every day for, 3 days a week for a year.
From Washington, D.C.?
From Virginia. So
from Virginia. You came back.
Yeah, I came back to Richmond after Northern Ireland. I wasn't quite ready for the shove and push of everyday life in Washington. Like, the day that someone snatched Fig Newtons out of my hand in the grocery store, I was like, I'm over it.
Whoa.
There's too much competition for simple things here.
Good decision. Yeah. Fig Newtons.
I know. Just back off my cookies.
Yeah. And you know what? That's the kind of spirit you need going into cider in this kind of trade, no doubt.
Yeah. So from Richmond, I went to cider school, did the apprenticeship, and then started working on my business plan over the course of that year, which was 2011. And I would say about 6 or 7 months in, I thought that I knew enough of what I needed to know to make a decision. And I said, dear husband, let's get ready to move to Winchester because that's where most of the apples are. And he said, but I don't want to go. And I was like, well, I thought you were being supportive. And he's like, I am being supportive, but I also need support. I'm still a new American. I only became a citizen last year. And
is he Irish?
He's Irish. Yes. So, he's Anglo-Irish.
So going to Europe was a good deal for you.
Yeah. Well, he has a split personality. He's Anglo-Irish okay. from the north. Whatever is convenient in the moment. But he still struggles with different American accents and senses of humor, and he had just gotten used to where he was, and the thought of relocating and beginning again wasn't fair. So he's like, you're smart, you'll figure this out. Just because everyone else's cidery is right next to their orchard doesn't mean that yours has to be. You can figure this out. And at the time, there were no urban cideries. This was the first one on the East Coast. So it was really trying to piece it all together and make new relationships to bring the raw materials to the customer and build it here mm-hmm. rather than the reverse, which most people bring the customers to the tasting room, which is next to the raw materials. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of split the value chain a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. And from all of those relationships that Blue Bee Cider put into place, all of these other urban cideries have been able to pop up and kind of...
So do you get your door tapped a lot saying, how did you do it?
In the beginning, yes. Yeah. And just paving the way made it mm-hmm. a lot easier for the people who came next. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, I was tired of people like wanting to have a chat because I'm trying to grow a business. Mm-hmm. And probably... 8 times out of 10, they weren't actually serious. They thought it was easy. Mm-hmm. What, this isn't as simple as just making a soft drink? No.
Right,
You have to know things all the way from how to make a tree and care for a tree and turn it into a productive asset, mm-hmm. manage it over time, mm-hmm. work on a seasonal basis. Fruit actually only harvests once a year mm-hmm. in North America mm-hmm. and people have apples all year round, so they don't understand that it's a one-off mm-hmm. so we get one harvest a year, we work from that harvest, and there actually are no seasonal ciders at Blue Bee Cider. It's all seasonal. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
Yeah,
so let's talk about your sourcing then for your apples.
Sure.
Because you know, having had a flight last evening, I was really impressed by your ciders.
Oh,
really
thank
impressed.
You.
Well, I want to talk more about that, but mm-hmm. let's just talk about the sourcing of your, and where are the apples coming from?
Sure. When I was apprenticing at Albemarle Cider Works, so there are three siblings, Bill, Chuck, and Charlotte, who run the company, and Charlotte is the business brains, Chuck is the cider brains, and Bill is the quiet one. He's actually the orcharding brains. And Bill taught me how to graft and to make trees. And they were generous enough, the Sheltons, to give me the cyanwood to start my first orchard. So luckily for me, in Richmond, there's a neighborhood called Churchill that has very good airflow, even though it's in the hot, humid South. Mm-hmm. And I built a nursery there at a community garden called the Chimborazo Park Community Garden. So I planted a few hundred trees on a plot there, and then after 2 years moved them out to Nelson County at an orchard called Silver Creek. So John and Ruth Saunders operate Silver Creek. It's been in her family for generations. He comes from a neighboring orcharding family just on the other side of the mountain, so he's from a multi-generational mm-hmm. apple growing family as well. And the first time I went to fruit school, which is part of the extension program here in Virginia, the first day of fruit school I met John Saunders, and he and Chuck were bantering back and forth, and Chuck's like, oh, this is my apprentice Courtney, she wants to make cider someday. And John said, well, I'll grow your apples. And you know, a year later, I held him to it. I was like, okay, I've got all of these trees. I know you've said you don't want to grow this kind of tree, but let's learn how to do this together. And he is very brave and put them all on the ground. So, and the deer ate most of the Hughes crab. Hughes crab is so full of sugar, even the cambium is sweet. And so they'll eat it all the way down to the ground.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
That is a problem.
Wow. So how is your orchard doing now?
It's doing really well. I mean, the Hughes crab is a little bit problematic in that spot, but we do get a full crop every year and more than we can use. So other cideries are now making Hughes crab as well. Some of the trees from that plot in Chimborazo Park were planted in Manchester at our first location in South Richmond. And every spring, about this time, late winter, you collect scions because that's what you do. And I had all of my scions collected, tagged, and labeled, and ready to go. And it just so happened that Philip Glaze came into the tasting room and wanted to know what apples we might want to have grown. I was like, actually, here. And I just gave him my entire box of scions because I knew I wasn't going to have time to make any trees that spring. We're in year two of being open to the public, and other things were occupying my mind. So I was like, here, just take this, turn it into an orchard. We'll see what happens. And I think they took those scions and did 30 acres. So they clear-topped existing trees.
Top worked it, yeah.
Yep. And from there, that's where the second planting began. And they've been really fun to work with. It's a different climate. So the Blue Ridge planting in Nelson has slightly different outcomes than the Northern Shenandoah, which is different soil, but then also different weather patterns. And one reason why I really wanted to do that is the crabs in particular tend to be biennial. And Hughes crab has kind of become one of our signature things that we always want to have available. And I didn't want to not have it one year. So there was a 50-50 chance that they would alternate years. And there's never really any way to know. The apples, I think they do talk to each other. And there's now some research about how trees talk to one another through the soil. But I was thinking that on the opposite sides of the mountain, they probably would be disconnected and they might not have that communication. It just so happens that they alternate years. So when one has a big year, the other has a small year, and vice versa. And occasionally there will be a frost situation, but it doesn't seem to break the chain very much.
Here we are recording on February 2nd. The sun is shining. I am not wearing a jacket. I just have a sweater on. Is this typical weather?
This is not unusual.
This is not unusual.
So when we do grafting workshops, it is not unusual for us to have them outside in the sun in short sleeves. And I remember even when I was young, we would have a 70-degree Christmas. Okay. So it's not unusual for us to kind of have this seesawing back and forth between warm and cold. We didn't get any snow in December. That's not totally unusual. Okay. We've had three snowfalls in January. Usually there's like one or two, and then in February, one or two. The biggest challenge for us is the spring freezes and finding a way to kind of manage that. I guess Mother Nature does a pretty good job of managing it for us. So the blossom has the five blossoms in the cluster. And we had a super scare in 2016, and I remember it vividly because we had just bought this building and started renovating it. And I was like, I can't believe we're going to lose the entire crop when I need the money for the cider to make this thing go. So everybody showed up for fruit school after that freeze. We were just like, bring us the answers. And someone from Penn State Extension came down to share their experiences. So in general, I would say apple country is becoming more like Pennsylvania in Virginia. And the wisdom that they have gleaned has been very useful for us on how to maintain the different kinds of changes in temperature at the last minute. So the scholarship is out there for us as we are right now. And things probably will continue to change and be weird. And the great thing about apples is they keep making new ones. Like, we can do that too. There's little seedlings everywhere. And John Saunders and I used to drive around his farm looking for opportunities in the early years because he was growing a lot of things that maybe there was actually a commercial use for that they weren't aware of. And we came across this wild crab that was growing right next to a creek bed at the bottom of a hill, like all the worst conditions. Mm-hmm. And it was happy, never been sprayed, fully fruiting. And so I said, well, why don't you harvest that this year and we'll ferment it and see what happens. And it smells like honey and tastes like black tea. It's just very tannic and got lots of sugar. And hopefully this is the year that we get a full harvest.
Oh, good.
But it's taken a long time. But after the initial trials, he went ahead and grafted 3,000 trees. So there will be fruit for others.
There will be, no
doubt.
More
than what we can use, yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe this is a good juncture to talk just about, before we get to your ciders.
Yeah.
What are you envisioning for the next, like, you know, 5-10 years for your cidery?
So I think for the next 2 years, we're still going to be trying to stabilize. So the pandemic definitely threw us for a loop.
Sure.
And we made it through the pandemic without any layoffs, which was, I don't think anyone other than business owners can really feel what an accomplishment that was. It was very hard, and I had to make some hard choices for my own self, but I wanted it, the team here to not feel the reality of what was happening with the business. Maybe that wasn't the right choice, I don't know, but that's what I felt like I needed to do. Mm-hmm. And now that we're coming out the other side, we're stabilizing and having to make some choices about the different business lines. So I find that the pandemic was clarifying and forced into higher relief some of the marketing choices that you make. So for us, I really believe that distribution is not a winner for the type of cider that we make. It's expensive. The crab apples are on par in terms of cost of production with wine grapes. And we do make wine here as well. So once that became clear to me, we are underpricing some of our products, and our pricing is going to have to change to reflect the truth of what is being put in the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that that's going to be a non-starter for some of our wholesale partners. Mm. And I'm sorry for that. But I also know that we have a good thing going on just where we are. And we ship online to all the major markets for cider.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think there's growth for us with online.
Right.
And we have the ability to do remote tasting room in Virginia. And we haven't done a darn thing with that privilege. Not a darn thing.
What do you mean by remote? Like a pop-up?
Yes.
Okay.
So we can do up to 5 pop-ups on any given day anywhere in the state.
Wow, that's very generous, you know, in terms of the offering regulation-wise.
Right. So Virginia does do a lot to support farm wineries and farm cideries.
Fantastic.
And we have not taken full advantage of some of those opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So where we're going to dial some things back over time, I would like to grow other things more.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, direct-to-consumer is the win.
Of course.
So
absolutely.
That's what we want to do.
Yeah. Well, you're well situated to be doing that, because who wouldn't want to come to this gorgeous site? I mean, for folks listening out there in Ciderville right now, we're sitting out in this outside patio area and picnic tables that flank this whole long yard here. And we're surrounded by stonework that can be reminiscent of Mexico to Italy, to some little Normandy farms, where I just adore the stonework and how it's so well pointed and how you set it up just so comfortable with heated, you know, outdoor heating and stuff mm-hmm. like that. And then there's an inside little venue where you're able to get your bottles and get a tasting. So it's an ideal location to come to. Ample parking in the whole neighborhood, and then there's food, food available, you know, what's not to love about this?
Yeah.
And the sun. The sun on February 2nd, 2022. I mean, that's a beautiful thing right there, you know, yeah. Win-win. Any mm-hmm. other changes that you're seeing coming out of COVID that you're looking to change from this?
Well, what you just described with our outdoor courtyard layout, that was new. So that was part of our pandemic response. Most of our service actually happened in that little tiny wheelwright shop.
It's like a warming area with a like a wood stove kind of setup. Yeah,
yes.
Which is nice too, all stonework.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
small.
Yeah, it's 800 square feet. So our service space indoors was 800 square feet, and it still is.
Mm-hmm.
But we needed to have more places for people to sit that were outdoors. And at the same time that pandemic law was coming down, the city of Richmond rezoned our neighborhood to decrease the parking requirements. So you can still see the parking lines where all of these tables...
People would actually park out here.
Yeah.
Come in here and park in your back courtyard. Wow.
Yeah, so people used to park where the picnic tables are now, but it's not required that we have that for parking anymore.
So just so I could understand, originally it was required that you had to have parking on site for your venue.
Yes.
What a relief not to have that.
Yes. Yeah, and we still have a few spaces over by the barn itself, but I guess there's six spaces along here that we were able to build out for customer seating.
Yeah.
And we split a bunch of barrels in half and planted up all of these planters. Figuring out how to keep them all watered has been an ongoing challenge, but we get better every year.
Drip lines you have set up, it's beautiful. I mean, it's a really lovely, it's very European.
We try.
Yeah, you got it. I mean, again, Europe, we keep on going back to that, but I've always been wondering, you know, when are Americans going to take a bit of the amazing, you know, outside venues and heated sources, and here we have it. That's the silver lining of COVID, isn't it?
You know? Yeah.
So.
Well, and I guess another upside of the pandemic is the customers are now more used to sitting outside. Having the heat source on the table is still a bonus, but they don't mind bundling up and coming to an outdoor venue in the middle of winter.
Well, when it's as warm as it is in Richmond, I mean, there's, you know, it's worth the stop off the highway, which is so close.
Yeah.
It's so easy, right off of Interstate 95.
Yep.
And you come here and you get to taste this amazing single varietal ciders that you have. I mean, that's what I've been focusing on, and I kind of like to spend my time there. So let's talk about your ciders.
Okay.
You talked about the Hughes crab. So you have a single varietal Hughes crab, right?
Yes.
Is there like a flagship single varietal? Would you call it the Hughes crab for?
I would say so. So Hughes was our first single varietal.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a bin is 20 bushels, and the first time we were able to fill a bin, it was just like
heaven.
I could not get over it.
Well, let's talk about how big a Hughes crab is.
Yeah, it's like 2 to 3 inches max.
Right, it's not a big like 2-pounder, you know.
And where we're growing them, they are yellow and they get a little bit of pink on the side that faces the sun. That same genetic material will turn red in Appalachia. It's so weird.
But so cool.
I know.
I love that.
It is what it is. So our Hughes crabs are yellow with a little bit of pink blush, and they start to water core when they're ready. So that's when we know it's time to get them down.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had that one bin, and at that time, that was only enough for our cider club to each get one bottle and then have two cases left for the library. It was just a super small batch. And the club at that time was super small.
Mm-hmm.
It has grown since then. But
is there still openings to the club? Or
yes.
Good.
There's still openings for the club. And that is still a staple for our club. They always get the first
Hughes crab.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
For the new vintage. And then Harrison came later, but that is a close second. The flavor on the Harrison is just amazing.
Yeah, sure is. Yeah.
So they always get one of those too. And in 2021, we did do a lot of single varietals, more than average. So anytime we're doing something new, the club gets the first bite of the apple on the new things. If it's big enough. If it's a small batch and we can only knock out a couple of kegs, we invite them for a first taste in the tasting room so they can taste it before everyone else. So the Crab Franc is an example of something that's not going to be enough to put in bottle for club, at least not this year. I think we'll have enough next year. We had a better Crab Franc harvest in 2021. And better in terms of bigger. We still don't know flavor-wise how it matches up, but it will take some time.
Well, that's exciting.
Yeah.
You have some like cool little projects on the side. So you have these, and I love the Spitzenberg.
Thank you.
I really, really
I
dig
love
this.
It too.
I have to admit, that's where I went for a standalone glass when I was here last evening, and I was really, really impressed by it. Sometimes I'll like hover over one. Well, going through the flight as you had set it up was perfect, and then going through it all very quickly and then starting to pop around kind of slowly really started showing the different, you know, profiles for each apple.
Yeah.
And the Spitzenberg was just one of the best Spitzenbergs I've ever had.
Oh, thank you.
That, you know, sometimes happens out of the moon, you just kind of like go, oh my God, I've just landed in my happy home.
Yeah.
So, yeah, well done.
Thank
really
you.
Really well done.
Thank
yeah.
you.
What else do you do here?
So we do blends. The first ciders were a blend, Aragon 1904, which is a blend of Pippin, Stamen, Gold Rush, Harrison, and then assorted other things depending on what the harvest brings us. That's always our best seller. It's a little bit more fruity. So in this neighborhood, which is a beer neighborhood, and I guess I need to put a plug in for Scott's Edition, which is the beverage district for the Richmond area. There's 13 producers now in a half a mile square. And that is good and bad. You know, it has ups and downs, but the beer drinker is the dominant profile for first timers who come here. And Aragon, I think, is more like what's expected. But for people who have preferences for IPAs and funky sours, we usually will have something for everyone. And then, so Aragon, then Charred Ordinary, which gets into the sour territory. That one is wine sap and York and various other things, black twig, whatever we've got going that
year. Just wonderful varieties that you have.
Yeah.
You really do.
We've been very lucky.
You sure are.
And the wine sap is a traditional Virginia apple for vinegar making. So with the Charred Ordinary, we let it get a little bit more sour. To be reflective of that Charred Ordinary or tavern style. There's a tavern near here that burned, and so it's named after that one.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
You'll find Ordinary sites all over Virginia.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a weird name for a tavern, but it is what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, that's the flavor of this area, which I want to get to. And maybe that's, let's go to that next.
Sure.
Yesterday, I went on a cider tour of Jackson Ward.
Yes.
And I know that you were really instrumental in that particular tour, which was just absolutely outstanding. I call it like an Academy Award level tour. And Gary, who was
amazing.
Our tour guide, he was just nonstop talking, and we were sucking it up like sponges. And that evening, last evening after the tour, we're all sitting around as I was meeting different people that were on the tour, and we're like, what was being said there? And this has me thinking. It just, it's going to sit with me for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And so I want to talk a little bit about, you know, here we are at Scott's Edition, and then Jackson Ward is a community unto its own. And how much overlap is there of the populations in Richmond itself? Is cider kind of a white drink at this point, or are you seeing that change?
Well, I don't know about cider as an industry as a whole, how it's perceived in the market, but I know that in Blue Bee in particular, there's been a lot of effort by our entire team to make this an inclusive and supportive place to work and to be a patron. And, you know, nobody's perfect. There are times when we're not going to get it right, but I think the team here is reflective of what we're trying to achieve. And having such a great staff that's so beautiful as well. I mean, very photogenic staff here. I don't fit in, but we have a variety.
That's not true. I want people out in Siderville to know that's not true.
But we have a variety of backgrounds represented. It's all Virginia, but everybody is really into cider. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that leads me to another point. And, you know, I didn't want to just get on, you know, the white line type mm-hmm. of piece. But what I really got yesterday was how Richmond is this cultural foodie capital.
Yeah.
And then we had your cider and other local ciders, Virginia ciders, paired with food. And then feasting on this knowledge, this rich Black history
yes.
in this community.
It's incredible.
Just, you know, from music to food and just community over and over again. I just felt the pride. It brings tears to my eyes, really, mm-hmm. to think about it. And to me, that pairs perfectly with cider.
Yeah.
You know, and so here's this timing where you have a population in this area that knows food and love and really enjoys good quality food. And then you have a site like Blue Bee creating really good quality cider. How does that influence you as an owner of this cidery? How does that, as you're moving forward with, you know, your two-year plan and stabilizing?
Yeah.
I know getting out of the pandemic, there's a lot, but how has Richmond impacted you?
Well, Richmond is the place where Liam decided that we would be. So kudos to him for choosing the location. And when I planted my flag in the ground and signed my lease, the beer wave had not yet hit. So Hardywood
yeah.
opened a few months before we opened,
yeah.
and Hardywood Park Brewery was really the small craft brewery that yeah. kicked off everything else in our city. So we got to kind of ride that wave, and we were the only cidery for a long time, which is so nice. It's always good to be first and mm-hmm. only.
And it's also scary too, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like really the pioneer, so mm-hmm. it's a yeah, big
but
respect.
I think because Richmond has such a great reputation, so many James Beard nominees, and even some winners. You should get a lunch from Sally Bell's while you're here. It's not too
Dolly
far.
Bell's?
Sally Bell's. Sally Bell's Sally. Kitchen.
Okay.
She does box lunches. It's a family business. I don't think the recipes or the contents of the box have changed in over 100 years.
Okay.
It's good stuff.
I went to Mama J's last
yes.
night.
Oh,
after
good.
We went there on the tour, I had to go
oh,
back.
Perfect. Well, and one of the things that Liana and I were trying to achieve with that tour mm. is to get people to come back. Like, we didn't want you to have a full meal on the trip. We wanted you to get samplings of what is within walking distance of the conference.
You did an outstanding job and a lot of pride for the city. It will last with me for a lifetime now. I really honestly
good.
Mean that. Yeah.
Good.
Coming to Blue Bee,
uh-huh.
I'll make a little switch here.
Yeah.
Coming to here, you're like open pretty much like every day except for just a couple days a week.
Yes. So 1 o'clock on the weekdays and then noon on the weekends.
Noon on the weekends, yeah. It's really right off the highway.
Yeah.
Super easy to get to. Scott's Edition, lots of food.
It's pet friendly, so we have a number of regulars that stop between New York and Florida. So we're halfway.
That you do.
And they bring their pets and they just have like a drink and some calm.
Aww.
Before they fight through the traffic.
Yeah. I just want to say the traffic was not bad for me.
Mm-hmm.
So people, you know, 95, Interstate 95 gets a bad rap, but it's pretty welcoming, just like all the folks I've found in Virginia are fantastic.
Good.
And this is an oasis, and it really does feel like a penthouse kind of rooftop, you know,
mm-hmm.
oasis in that way. So I want to thank you, Courtney.
Oh, thank you so much, Rhea.
For spending the time here today.
My pleasure.
Courtney and I talking about the food there in Richmond. It's a total foodie city and libation capital. And right at Blue Bee, you could get some nice fine gourmand cheese at Truckle. It's right next to the tasting room. And then for lunch, I did take her recommendation and I went to Sally Bell's and I ordered the chicken salad lunchbox. And the lunchbox happens to be a paper box and it is all folded up and tied with a string. It was like out of this world. It's what you would expect as if you're going into a postcard back in time. And the quality of food was delicious. In fact, it had a little deviled egg all wrapped up in parchment paper, its own single deviled egg in this box. I got the potato salad. It came with a little pickle on top. I have a photo of this. I'm going to be putting it up on Instagram because you just got to see the way it was packaged. I think that says a lot about an eatery. No aluminum foil, all paper, which is so cool. And then each box gets its own little cupcake. And these aren't like your typical kind of cupcakes. Normally I go for chocolate, but the lemon cupcake looks so good. And I was thinking, I'm going to have a little cider with that. That's just going to pair perfectly. Brought that down to the waterfront, the river, the James River that goes right alongside Richmond, Virginia. Woo! Sally Bell's, a little Blue Bee cider, all these amazing different stops there. Check out Richmond. You will not be disappointed. And to help you out, I'll have links in the show notes to all these places I'm talking about for this year, episode 309 at ciderchat.com. I have plenty of episodes in the queue for you, so don't forget to press the button to follow this here podcast called Cider Chat. And with that, I leave you here. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards and having fun. There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like palms. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
Like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards, having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet.
Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We like orchards, having some fun.